Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of the Korean version of Leverage, and we're also probably going to spoil the heck out of the American Leverage, which it is very clearly based on.
Well, and what I love is, at the time we watched this, this is a 2019 show, mm-hmm. We got it on DVD, you managed
found it on eBay on DVD.
Yeah. So we read this TV show.
Yeah, tons of subtitles. Fortunately, in English.
Yes. But
even when they had people speaking English at the end.
Yeah, which was great fun. Well, and my joke on that is I picked up Dances with Wolves in Spain because they had in Catalan, which I just thought was hilarious, right? But it had English subtitles. And it also had Spanish subtitles for if you didn't speak the Catalan. So I'm watching it at one point, and they didn't do subtitles on the Native Americans when they were speaking the Indian languages. That was voiceovered into Spanish. So I was sitting there trying to use my high school Spanish to get the Native American dialogue.
Well, here, when they did have a few people that were speaking English and stuff, I appreciated how the subtitles matched exactly what they were saying.
So did I. Yeah. Okay, so this is the only season out.
Yes.
I desperately hope it gets more.
Yeah, I was expecting a clean end, and we didn't get that. It was kind of a springboard for a next. So I know nothing about Korean television and stuff like that. This is the first Korean thing I've watched.
Me too.
So I don't know if it's like the US, where you tend to just do season after season of stuff, or more like the UK, where you do a series, and maybe you come back and revisit it.
Yeah. And what fascinates me is, because this was done, well, came out in 2019. So mm-hmm. Let's say it was done 2018, 2019, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But that's long enough after the full five seasons.
Yeah, because
the U.S. Leverage.
Original one ended in 2012.
Yeah. And at the end of the episodes, they will do a still frame. And then they say, you know, based on the show created by, and mm-hmm. they, John Rogers, Chris Downey. But then they'll give a writing credit to one of the writers from the original show.
It's kind of whichever one that they had lifted the most from. And lifted's not the right term.
Been inspired by.
Yeah. What I found fascinating about this, and why I was curious about it, is like, how well does it translate to another country, another culture, mm-hmm. another cast?
Yes.
And from the get-go, it was very clear that they had made some changes to the formula, the structure of the show. But having now watched all 16 episodes, now these episodes are almost an hour long. It winds up being, I think, about 14 and a half hours. They're not short episodes,
mm-hmm.
and they are not structured in a standard North American five-act structure kind of a thing.
Well,
because the plots, it's a cross between the episodic stuff and like a Netflix show.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the plots bleed across episodes.
Well, and I loved the way they drew inspiration from the five seasons as a whole.
Yes, they had clearly watched the show, or the original show, understood the original show, and made a couple of tweaks that I thought were, in some cases, brilliant moves.
Mm-hmm.
We actually get to see their version of Nate while his son is still alive. We get to know the son.
Yeah, yeah. We really start, in that sense, 5 years before the American Leverage. Because the American Leverage starts 5 years after Nate's son died.
Was it that long after?
It was. He'd been in a bottle for 5 years.
I thought by the time they made that reference, it was a good couple of years into the series. I was thinking it was only two.
That's
I don't know if they'd clearly established.
It was definitely several years.
It couldn't have been five, because when they do in the original Leverage the flashback episode of how they all first encountered each other, even though they didn't really meet, He was not a drunk at that point. That seemed to be before Sam died.
Right, and that was like 8 years ago, wasn't it?
I thought that was 5 years ago.
Oh, interesting. Okay, maybe that's where I got the 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
But here, they changed the timing on Nate's son. And I'm going to refer to the Korean characters by the American names because I can't keep them straight.
Well, let's just do a quick rundown.
So we've got the mastermind, Nate Ford, on the American version.
Right, which, and because it's Korean, they do the surname first. So surname Lee, and then character name Taijun.
Yeah. Then we've got Sophie Devereaux, which is the grifter.
Right. Surname Huang, and then, and because the grifter goes by so many names over the course of the show, and because we're reading subtitles, and they say names so quickly, I'm not going to pronounce any of the names right, because Taijun is really the only name that we got where he was being addressed.
He's the one we get the name the most.
Well, and in a way where it's a very clear connection,
yes,
if you will. But anyways, the equivalent of Sophie is Soo Young, Soo Hwang, something to that effect.
Something like that. Then we've got the Alucardist and the hacker.
Right. Surname Young, and then Yusing.
Yusing, and we get his name a lot.
Yes.
We've got Parker, the thief.
Surname Go, and then Naibul.
Yeah. And then we've got Elliot Spencer, the hitter.
Okay, well, two things I love about him. He seems to have grown up in the U.S. or some connection to the U.S. because the character served in the Marines. So his name is actually American style.
Yeah.
He's Roy Rue, but I loved his puppy.
Yes, his dog Elliot.
Yes, that was positively adorable.
There were a couple of those things that were, again, callbacks to the American version or nods to it.
Yeah.
But they were not doing a caricature of the American versions.
No.
The grifter here, while she's got that actress air about her, it comes out very differently than the way Sophie acted.
Yes.
But you can see, oh, she's either overacting or playing into the role or whatever. You can see the same things even though they're done differently.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, the hacker has some things that are very Hardison ish and other things that are very much not.
Yeah. Well, and this Parker character, first of all, doesn't have the Asperger's.
Nope.
Which is very much an American writing thing, mm-hmm. I think. But does have a bit of, I guess, what I felt the grifter Tara had, which is the, yeah, this is my thing, but I can defend myself also.
Yeah, she was much more of a fighter. There were parts of their version of Parker that had a little bit of Elliot Spencer rolled in.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this version, the thief and the hacker, again, I'm going to use just the American names, Parker and Hardison, have been working together.
Yeah.
Prior to ever really encountering Nate or meeting, you know, Spencer.
They seem to have sort of a love-hate relationship.
Oh, very much so.
As they work together. And, I mean, this show really nailed the family dynamic without feeling the need to put in the are they or aren't they sexual dating relationships.
I felt there was an arc of Parker and Hardison's kind of going from they can't stand each other but work together to, no, she's realizing she likes him. And he's always liked her. So I felt that that arc kind of was in there, but it was not in the forefront.
But for me, it was they went from the other person's a necessary evil for my job to I love my annoying brother, but he's still kind of annoying at times.
Again, I felt they did that.
But my point is they didn't take it into a dating relationship.
At the end, he was asking her out.
He was trying to. She
was
oblivious.
Yes. My point is they at least tried to play
that
interest. And I think the equivalent of Nate and Sophie had that backstory, although it was frankly a lot further background than foreground for this.
Nate and Sophie were an old married couple the whole show, and it worked really well.
I was unclear what their backstory was supposed to be because Tae-jun, the Nate equivalent, had a kid.
Yeah.
With another woman.
Yeah.
Yet they had this backstory going back a good couple of years or whatever. So how did they know? When did they fall out of touch? You know? And if you know the American version, you can kind of read some stuff in.
It's funny, though, because Tae-jun's kid's mom has a different surname, Shin Yuri. And so are they married? Are they not married? She's never referred to as either his wife or his ex-wife.
Yeah, and she vanishes after the kid dies.
Yes.
And the other part about that whole thing that was confusing is she is always with this one guy.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'm like, is that... he's not the father, clearly. He doesn't seem to be a brother. I couldn't tell how they were related or connected. Turns out that guy was a childhood friend of Tae-jun's.
You know...
And wound up being this show's Latimer.
If this Korean Leverage was brought back to be a redone American Leverage, if you will, then what typical American writers would do, because we don't get this Latimer's motive for certain things. It's kind of a, you were the perfect convenient pawn.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just that you were convenient. You were perfect in a lot of ways. But in an American version, there also would have been an element of, with you and your kid out of the way,
I can have the girl I want kind of thing. Absolutely, absolutely.
That's such an American approach. And yet, this didn't do that. And there's so many times when I come back to, I wish I knew the culture better. It's not a matter of understood, don't understand. I'm just not familiar enough with the culture to know how would they react to something like that. How would they feel about it? There was one episode where I finally understood what was going on in a scene, but I realized I'm about 45 seconds behind the Korean audience. And it's the one where, and I think it was the castle security CEO is mm-hmm. at the restaurant with his wife to celebrate the anniversary. And he goes to our Sophie, who's impersonating the manager. And it's basically, you didn't give me your business card. You didn't present your contact information. I'm like, oh, yes, that's a whole culturally speaking. That's a
ritualistic thing over there. Yeah.
Yeah. But as an American, it's, you know, the manager didn't introduce herself to an important person the moment they entered the restaurant. Yet in America, that takes a while if it happens.
Yeah, there's an aspect of status, of addressing people by their titles and seniority and stuff in the Korean culture that I became aware of through the show, but don't really fully appreciate or understand.
Well, I think the Men Young Men series of episodes did the best job with showing the importance of how you respond to a business card when it's given to you.
Yes, yes. And I've got enough experience with Japanese culture to mm-hmm. understand the generalities of it.
I mean, I understand when a business card is given to me by someone from that culture, you don't just cast it aside like Tae-jun did.
Well, they reach forward with both hands, yes. grab it, look at it, and treat it with respect.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think if I hadn't known that going in, then that scene where Tae-jun is handed a card, doesn't even glance at it, takes it with two fingers just barely and just kind of chucks it onto the saucer
mm-hmm.
on the table. I'm like, ooh, he just disrespected someone who feels very important.
I'm sure there's a ton of aspects along those lines where some of those nuances, or maybe not nuances, but aspects, were lost on me.
Yeah, yeah. But and there were many times when I wondered, am I missing something? Or am I just assuming there's a cultural layer?
I am definitely figuring there's a cultural layer I missed, and there's probably a number of other things I missed. In some cases, the subtitles went by a little too fast.
Yes.
And sometimes, because I'm looking at the bottom to read the subtitle, I'm not necessarily catching everything in the scene.
Yeah.
But that's just the nature of watching a foreign production.
Oh, that's why I referred to this as reading television.
Yes.
And it's very exhausting.
I did find these episodes highly entertaining, but very tiring.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because I'm literally reading the thing, but these are in some cases, like the first episode or two is a hair over an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
Now compare that to like a 42-minute American show, so you've got almost an extra third to the episode. I mean, this was the longest season of Leverage we've watched.
Yeah.
And one of the seasons of the American one went 18 episodes versus the 16 here.
Well, and to me, this was a phenomenal season.
It was, and they covered a lot of ground. But what threw me particularly at first, because we've watched this in five sittings, two episodes, then one, and then I think kind of four, four, and four.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably dropped an episode in there. Anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Total of 16. We watched it in about five sittings. So it took us 2 weeks to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to the end of kind of their first case, they're doing the, we've solved the case. They do the let's all line up and walk across the street and get that lineup shot of the heroes walking forward thing. And then they do a cut to another scene. And I'm thinking, oh, they're giving us a teaser of the next plot. This was like at the 30-minute point in an hour-long episode, and they go 30 minutes into this next plot, and I'm like, the pacing on this, it works. It's just not what I was expecting.
Well, and it's funny, because when we got to the end of that episode, you asked me, how far into it do I think they switched cases? I'm like, 30 minutes.
And you called it right on the button, yeah.
Yeah, but part of it was when we got to that scene at the crosswalk. I really loved what they did with the dialogue, with the crosswalk, with just how that scene unfolded. There are people who follow the signals and they show us the walk signal. There are people who wait for the signal. It flips to the don't walk, and three of the people who had started into the intersection come back to the side with the ones who hadn't started yet.
There was a little bit of who are the rule followers and the rule breakers.
Yeah. And then they have this bit about maybe it's time we change the signals.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just this beautiful scene.
Well, and we also had somebody who was surreptitiously taking photos of the team, which plays in later.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very well done. But that first kind of case, if you will, which involved the Nate equivalent to June stealing a drug to try to save his kid and all of that, played out over like 2.5 episodes.
Mm-hmm. That first case was extraordinarily personal.
Yes.
And then Taijun ends up in jail and we don't know for how long. And that drove me batty throughout the series. How long was he in jail?
Roughly 9 months, I figure.
I was going to say, based on, at one point they say his son died at this point and then another kid died a year later. And then we're a year later and we're finally at trial over the kid who died the year later. Something to that effect.
I thought his son had died a year earlier and the kid had just recently died.
There you go.
I was taking the whole series as having covered roughly a year.
Yeah.
From the time we first see everybody through to the end there. But it's a little hard to gauge.
But yeah, if we hadn't had the episode with the trial, I would have had no way to ballpark. Well, how long he was in jail.
What I found really interesting while we were watching this is we would often tell the other one, it's like, okay, like the trial, that seemed to be the Brent Spiner episode from first season that they're drawing inspiration from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole bit with Nate's son dying wasn't really an episode. It was backstory.
Yeah.
But then there were other things where it's like, okay, this part of this heist, oh, the hacker got captured by the bad guys. Well, that's the Iceman job.
Yeah.
And there were a couple where they were mixing and matching a number of them and remastering them in the order they played in, the way, like, the trial here was very different than the trial from the Brent Spiner episode. But you could tell where they were pulling their inspirations from. They credited the writers.
Well, and just like the Brent Spiner episode, there were the cameras in the courtroom, the camera in the mm-hmm. jury room. The lawyer had the earbud and was getting fed stuff. But instead of having a different bad guy du jour, again, it was the Latimer equivalent.
Yes.
And the Latimer equivalent having almost a cabal of six that's gradually getting whittled down.
Well, and being hinted at from the very first, playing out to the very end, whereas Latimer in that season, which was fourth season?
I think so.
Was somebody's bugging the office kind of thing at the beginning. It takes about halfway through to even get the name Latimer. We see him a little near the end, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Everything that they tried to do in the American version for these arcs, this show did.
Oh, and it did it so beautifully, because there are times when our crew is sitting at the table in their headquarters, which I loved,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, the stock price went up, darn it. They just made money off of us.
Everything that Latimer was saying, that he profited off what the leverage team had been doing in the U.S., the leverage team was realizing this guy mm-hmm. was he made money off us in this case, you know, kind of.
He manipulated us into doing this. He manipulated us into doing that. And, I mean, there were so many things. I'm not by any means going to say it was a perfect show, because there were a few things that annoyed me.
Well, and there were a couple with one of the things near the end that we watched this evening where it's like, oh, man, they did flashbacks, but to something we'd seen, and now they're telling us it wasn't what we saw, it was different. It's like, that's not fair.
Yeah, because in the American leverage, they'll show us 30 seconds of a scene, and then they'll say later, oh, but did you know there was 15 seconds before that and 30 seconds after that, and with that minute and 15 seconds, you get a whole different idea of the scene because you now have a different context.
What you had seen originally was still true. It was just incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
Here, what we'd seen earlier was wrong.
Yeah.
That was mainly in that whole book event sequence. That was the one place I would say this show...
It was there, but it was also with the lady who stole her own gold.
Yeah.
So it started very much near the end of the season, but...
But those were the things where I think the show kind of went wrong. Otherwise, I think they did a really good job on the writing. I think mm-hmm. they had a good cast. And I loved how they stayed true to the spirit of Leverage,
mm-hmm.
Treated it with respect, and didn't just go down the same road the same way.
Well, and they managed to take things that you've got... Are the elderly treated properly in nursing homes?
Mm-hmm.
And then you lay on to that basically Medicare fraud.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you lay on top of that, you know, if somebody has no next of kin, could a nursing home or its administrators get a life insurance policy on the residents?
Yeah. They did a lot of things that felt... like cases that Leverage would have done in the U.S. had it kept going.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas in the American version, here's the case, let's spell it out, let's go do that. Here, the formula was very different because you didn't usually have a client that came to them and said, I need your help with this.
Well, here we had Taijun, who needs to steal medication to save his son's life. And then a year later finds out the side effects from that medication probably would have killed his son anyway,
mm-hmm.
which spins him in a whole different direction. But then you have Yu-Sing, who foolishly, and we know at the time, he's already invested $1 million now.
He's gotten conned, so they need to go help him get his money back.
But he throws a second million in.
Yeah, peer pressure.
Yes. Okay, so two very personally connected ones. But then we go from that to the nursing home. Which
was also personal because of Parker's equivalent, her mentor.
Yeah. And there was a great scene with the mentor in the nursing home when Naboil is trying to break into a safe. And the mentor with Alzheimer's may not know what day it is or anything else, but she remembers from when she was 20 years old how to break into that safe.
Why are you having problems with this? I taught you better than that. Here, let me do it.
Yes. I mean, it was beautiful.
Well, and it's funny because I would love to see them do, in the American revival, that sort of elder care issue if they could get Richard Chamberlain back.
Yes. Yeah.
And, I mean, there's so many things that while I was watching this, it's like, no, they didn't do that in the American version, but man, I wish they would. The equivalent of the Iceman episode when the hackers got it, you know, seem like he's defeating the the hitman, the fighter, you know, when Hardison's going after Elliot equivalent. In this case, Roy is sitting there holding the other guy's hand to make it look like he's punching and stuff and kind of doing both parts of the fight. And I could just see Christian Kane and Aldous Hodge doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And what I would love to see for this Korean show is not only an American release of it versus having to go, you know, through eBay and chase down the Korean version, but a commentary track by the American cast the first time through of them watching it.
Yeah. Well, there were several times when I couldn't resist asking you, do you think that's how she thinks the American Sophie would have done that scene?
Mm-hmm. There were a couple of times where I would be amazed if that actress had not watched the American version.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think Roy was... His mannerisms were not Elliot's.
No.
There were parts of, again, the hacker's name. Again, I get it.
Yu Sing.
Where parts of it, it's like, yeah, he's going for the high five like Hardison would, not getting it. And there are other times where that's not Hardison.
Mm-hmm.
But it fills the same narrative role. It hits the same kind of story beats where it needed to. It worked, and it had the spirit of the character, even if the instantiation was a bit different.
Yeah.
And that's, again, what I loved about this is the relationship between the characters. I could see in some cases where they were pulling straight from the American. A few other cases, like, no, if that was the American version, it wouldn't have been Elliot saying it. It would have been Hardison saying it. Given the case, it had to be Elliot because, You know?
Well, there was at one point where we've basically confined everybody to the headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
We can't afford to raise our heads above ground and be seen. And Yu-Sing and Nibol, they're getting cabin fever. They want to go out.
It's like, let's go sneak out and go get some coffee.
Yeah. And Roy overhears them and basically offers to chaperone. Not in those terms, but it's basically, if you're sneaking out, you're taking me with you.
If you're going to do it, it's going to be dangerous. I'm going to keep an eye on it. Was how I read it.
Yeah, and it's about how it played. But then when they get there and he sits at a separate table with his earbuds, give them their privacy, but keep an eye on them. It was the protective older brother.
Well, it's funny because I think if that had happened with the American cast, Elliot would have flat out said, it's too dangerous, but I know you're going to do it anyway, so I'm coming with you and you do it the way I say you do it, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I could see, again, where they were riffing on it, where they were getting inspired by it, and we're like, we're going to have to change it just a little.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, I thought the changes worked for their show.
Now, we haven't mentioned their equivalent to Bonanno.
No, it was a police friend of Tae-joon's that narratively served a very similar role, but it was a very different relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets kind of almost brought into the team at times.
He brings them a case early on.
Yeah. Winds up working a case and getting an earbud at one point.
Yeah.
Kind of sort of betrayed Tae-joon, but not intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he'd been suckered by the Latimer equivalent. And
suckered in a believable way.
Yes.
It's easy to forgive him.
Yeah. But it was funny because there were a lot of times where we're watching this. It's like, okay, this is the Latimer type. I think this is either going to be the Sterling type or the Bonanno. It's Bonanno.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say that their Latimer also was kind of sort of a Sterling equivalent.
Mm.
You know, yeah. The anti-Nate, if you will.
Yeah. The rival.
The rival. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The mentor for Parker was Archie in the American version. It was, you know, female.
In-Sook.
In-Sook with this one. But you could see it's like, that's where they're drawing.
Mm-hmm.
We never got Chaos.
No. Or a rival team.
We kind of got a rival team in terms of the Latimer equivalent.
See, and that's what I was about to say. We did have rival earbuds and we had the Cabal. But really, that was a mastermind moving pawns. That wasn't a team.
Yeah, to me, it was inspired by the team as much as it was inspired by
Latimer.
I was now actually going to say the Brent Spiner legal episode.
Okay, yeah.
So, again, I could see where they were drawing from different things, but we also never got the FBI agent equivalents.
Mm-hmm.
Although they posed as cops a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, again, the McSweeney kind of thing. But there really weren't a ton of recurring characters in the American version, and I felt there were a lot more... Well, I'm going to go with recurring, 16 episodes.
Yeah.
But between the Latimer equivalent, the Bonanno equivalent, the various chairman, mayor, and other people of the Latimer equivalent's kind of cabal that we see throughout.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I did find challenging on this is because I'm being distracted kind of by the subtitles and such, it's hard to keep track of, wait, which character is which?
There were several times I had to ask you, is this this person or is this this person? Is this Roy undercover, or is this just someone who could be Roy's body double, and I'm just confused?
When Roy was posing as the owner of the horses or whatever, I at first didn't recognize him.
Okay, I call foul on that one. Roy is clean-shaven right up until he poses as the horse owner and has stubble. An hour later, he's clean-shaven, okay, fine, but then he is clean-shaven until he needs to be the owner again, and suddenly he has stubble.
There was no let's put on fake hair or anything of the sort of.
To me, that was cheating.
Which was funny because in, I think, one of the earlier episodes, Tejum was having makeup to look older.
Yes, yes.
And we saw that getting applied and such.
Yeah.
So I think they tried to play fair in some places. Others, it didn't quite happen. And there were a couple of times where it's like, you got to pay attention for what's going on. And I love that about the show. It had some depth to it. It, again, was pulling some stuff of, like, when they were doing the equivalent of the Iceman job, their Sophie equivalent was front and center in that. That was when Sophie was out on, you know...
maternity leave.
Well, the actress was on maternity leave. Sophie was on walkabout, and we hadn't gotten Tara yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were... without a grifter, which is why the hacker was standing in for that. Here, you know, he was just part of the group.
Well, they combined the Iceman job with the one with Mako.
They combined it with that, and I want to say the one with the gold
dealers.
Yeah. And again, they were mixing and matching, and there were a couple of times where they took what I thought was a fun but not great episode of the original and turn that plot line into a major thread, specifically the DC episode that was kind of the backdoor pilot if Parker Hardison and Elliot had spun off.
Yeah.
And that plot line, and again, it wasn't just a, hey, let's do it as a one-off. That was an integral plot of the entire arc of the season.
Well, they mixed it with the lady who wanted to destroy wheat.
Yes. Yes.
Which is part of it. So they, I think part of what we loved is they just kept adding layers.
Well, they added layers, and part of this is, I'm going to attribute to a difference between then and now, decade later of television.
Yes.
And also potentially a difference between Korean television, not knowing how, if it's typically episodic, if it's typically a serial narrative or anything, I don't know. But I think they took...
They aired in two episodes a night bursts.
And I don't know if that's uncommon or if that's standard or I don't know.
That's interesting.
But they took the various story threads from five seasons of the original and interwove them to get a tight braid of a core arc over the course of 16 episodes of a season, where one flowed naturally into the next, into the next, into the next. And yeah, there were a couple of times of, okay, we finished the one, we've dealt with the nursing home, or the lawsuit, or, you know, what have you. But it almost was like peeling back the onion of, well, this is the next thing that uncovered.
Yeah.
But well, without feeling like we're on that constant treadmill of, are we ever going to get done?
We helped the doctor that took care of Taijun's son, technically a resident.
Is kind of, sort of a callback to the final episode.
Yeah. We provided money and what seemed to be a new facility for the residents of the Old and Gold nursing home who had no family members.
Which I took as similar to the Castleman episode in the first season where the guy had gotten wounded.
Mm, yes.
And that whole Castleman security thing was also part of one of the earlier story arcs.
Yeah.
So I could see where it's like, oh, I like this idea, but what if we did this part here and that part there?
Yeah. Well, we never had the blatant alternate revenue stream, and yet we were giving money to very good causes and kind of repaying people along the way.
Well, it was also never clear how this group had enough money to stay around, because they never really seemed to profit on any of the jobs.
We made money on one of the biomedical companies back at the beginning.
Okay.
That's how Yu Sing had the $2 million.
Right, right. He had been told invest at this point. You're right. But it was not to the equivalent of the score that the original team got in the pilot.
Yeah.
And they didn't seem to be projecting what was going to happen to their marks and kind of investing along the Latimer-ish style.
Yeah. Well, and we got all the money back from the guy who tried to rip off Yu Sing and created a fund that kind of the person who helped draw their attention to what was going on there was responsible for helping disperse the money back to the people who'd gotten conned in the pyramid scheme.
Well, and that was one of the times it felt most leverage client sort of a thing. Because while they've created this leverage company, I mean, they've got it labeled on their van and so forth, you really, other than like the Bonanno equivalent, I would be hard pressed to name too many people that came up to them and had the here's my sob story, come help me.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny that you say they created the leverage company, because they even had the scene where Yu Sing is saying, I made profiles for you and this, that, and the other. Feel free to bring in plants for your desk space. And Nabul drops this duffel bag on the table and starts pulling out the carabiners and the big ropes for rappelling. And he's like, not what I meant by office decor.
Yeah, yeah, but it... That was so much out of that second episode of the American series, when Hardison is uncovered, here's our office, here's your profiles, here's how you did in the company picnic, you know, the race or whatever.
Yeah.
So there again, you can see where they got inspired by little bits and stuff, but I think this writing team, I imagine they went through and had watched everything and everybody came with their ideas, but they wove that into a nice cohesive tapestry.
Well, one of the things that they spun and I really liked was instead of one of our fake identities getting called for jury duty, they needed to get somebody onto a jury. And it's who do we have that looks the most like somebody who was actually called for the jury?
Who can we sub in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that had some fun stuff. And it was the grifter versus the thief who had to be in the trial.
Yeah.
And we never replaced the lawyer.
Well, but the grifter trying to walk the fine line at voir dire to successfully get picked. And you see different people in the courtroom going, that's not really an answer, but wasn't offensive either.
Well, there was one where she was answering it and it was clear that that's a very odd answer, unless you realize this is a career criminal giving it.
Yeah.
You know? Kind of the, if there is no evidence, you've really got to respect the craftsmanship of that.
Yes, yes.
But again, that was one where it was very clear what episode they were pulling from. The case was totally different. We'd never had the hacker kind of replace the lawyer or the Nate equivalent replace the lawyer, any of that stuff. So the path it went down in the original and the path it goes down here, very different, but again, it had a lot of the same hallmarks.
Well, instead of replacing the lawyer, we became an anonymous source to the lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, that whole anonymous source is very much in the spirit of the American version. It was inspired by, it was not a rewrite of.
Well, and I suspect culturally putting a fake lawyer in the courtroom would have been one of those lines they were unwilling to cross. Someone who hasn't passed their equivalent of the bar practicing law.
what's funny is they actually address that you can't pose as a lawyer in a courtroom when Tara gets introduced.
Yeah.
Because she's posing as a lawyer at one point in a courtroom.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and she was the one aghast of, you can't do that. I would love to see this show somehow acknowledged in the revival of the American one. I would love to see a second season of this show.
So would I. Yeah.
When they ended with the, we've got to go after the Black Book, it seemed to me like they were setting up the equivalent of the Italian.
Both the Italian and the Data that's
But the Data
stored.
Was in the final episode, exactly. Yeah. The actual Black Book and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I was, again, surprised we never got a Sterling equivalent going after them. If anything, these guys seem fairly buddy-buddy with the cops by the end.
Well, and that was the interesting thing, was in the first episode or two, I couldn't actually tell that the Bonanno equivalent was a cop. At the beginning of the first episode, I thought he also worked for the insurance company.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things there they could have clarified and made a little bit better.
Yeah, so it took me time to figure, oh, okay, he's a police officer who's sort of investigating from the police side what Tai-jun is investigating from the insurance side.
Yeah, that becomes clear later, but much later.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I would say that aspect of the pilot reminded me of the Rashomon job when they were all kind of, well, here's how I stole that.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't the same thing. We didn't have everybody involved, but...
Yeah.
I also loved how the first headquarters was the Sophie's stage or theater equivalent.
Yes, yes.
We never got the acting group, which is a shame, but them being based off the out of the theater was fun.
Yeah, we did get her acting there a few times. At one point when we needed a business... two of her audience members won a prize.
And that was very much like, let's clear out the dealership,
mm-hmm.
give them an all-expenses-paid trip, and we'll take it over for a bit.
Yeah.
When they get the second headquarters, that one was at what looked like a shopping mall, but apparently was a bus station, like a multi-story mass transit sort of a thing. And it was in the parking garage in kind of a sealed-off area.
They referred to it as unclaimed space in the parking garage. Something to that effect.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, there's this unclaimed space. Somehow the elevator has a back door that goes into it, and there's a way to the hacker set it up to hit these keys, get there. I was okay with that. I just couldn't figure out how they got all the stuff in there.
Slowly.
Even the big couches that I don't think would fit through the elevator.
Yeah, well, you know, it's TV magic.
It was a nice looking base, and I would have enjoyed a tour of it.
Yeah.
It was multiple stories. They had a nice kind of, here's the monitor wall, let's do the briefings here. Had a place to go have food or coffee somewhere else, and it seemed like some of them were living there.
I was going to say, it had a place to work out. Tai-jun had a bed. Yeah. Yu-Sing seemed to be living there too, so yeah.
So, it was interesting. The van... Very nice, very reminiscent of Lucille.
Nicer than Lucille.
Well, the first man, not so much. But the second man, very posh, very nice. It just seemed a little bigger than should have been inside the van, maybe?
Yeah, well, you know. Now, okay, at one point when we were watching it, and I finally asked you, I'm like, do you think they're really saying gosh and darn it?
Yeah, there were a couple of times where the subtitles were really, it felt watered down. But then there was one time where the Parker equivalent was saying some stuff that was getting bleeped out. And she's like, they're so mean, that jerk. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that may not have been what was said.
Yeah.
Although I got the impression that it was like bleeped for comedic effect.
Yes, me too. Yeah. But and it worked. It was hilarious. And just going on little differences between having not watched Korean TV before versus American TV, I'm always amazed how many cars get smashed up on American TV.
We got a couple of car chases here, and every time we were pointing out, see, they're not even touching. Because there were a couple where they would swerve near each other, and the other would swerve out of the way kind of a deal. I had mentioned at one point, yeah, if that was American, they'd have scraped each other by now.
I mean, that... at least twice somebody cuts someone else off. And it's like, okay, if you basically make a hard right to create a T in front of the other car, and they stop with a foot before you. This is a, we're not risking scratches on the cars.
Yes. Whereas you had a couple of times in the American one where some cars get bashed up pretty well. Now, they did pull from Boys Night Out the swap the car for the substitute car.
Yes, which was well done.
And that was done as kind of the end of the Iceman job equivalent.
Yeah.
So that's where they were, again, mixing and matching. It's like, for this, what if we used what they did over here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, man, I would, like I said, I'd love to hear a commentary track by Christian Kane, Aldous Hodge, and the others as they're watching this.
I really think there are two commentary tracks. The actor one, but also the writing room one.
Absolutely the writer room one.
Yeah.
And that's one where I know at one point John Rogers, I think, was doing like a podcast or something.
That'd be awesome.
And man, I think it'd be better as a podcast in so much as I wouldn't want them limited to the runtime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm sure there'd be a couple of places, well, man, they did this. You know, we thought about that, but we didn't do it for this, or we thought about, you know, we did, you know.
Well, they had a scene where the police chief, I think it was, police commissioner, who is actually the owner of the castle security type.
He's the guy actually running the other security company, yeah.
Right. He's going to have a very sensitive meeting with Taijun, who's supposedly buying castle security, a junkyard, because, you know, that's where I have all my very secure business meetings and stuff. At one point, the Russian phantom, the Russian ghost, is coming to eliminate Taijun if he doesn't do what he needs to do, according to the police commissioner. Roy goes and fights him, and Roy is actually having a tough time. So first Yu-Sing comes in to help, and Yu-Sing ends up on the ground courtesy of Naboil, which is just funny.
She accidentally tases him, I think.
Yeah. But then it's the Sophie equivalents.
Oh, yeah.
To the rescue.
That's one of the one times a car actually hits something. She hits him with a van.
Yeah, but they pixelated the entire front of the car, what she hit. It's just kind of a, no, don't look here, kids. This is bad. Don't
it was
don't
either
look
don't look
this.
Here, kids, it's bad, or don't look here, adults, that's a dummy we threw in front of the van.
Yes, yes.
Either way, it worked.
It did.
Yeah, they did some fun stuff here. And I think the Korean production company should be proud of what they did. I think
really
they did
should.
A very good job. I think it holds up to the standard that Leverage had set in America. And in many respects, I think exceeds it. And I think the American production company should take some great pride into, here's what somebody did based on our work. They remastered it. They mixed and matched some pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Went in a couple of different directions, did the same thing in a few other areas, and it worked. And the two stand apart, but you can clearly, I mean, having watched all five seasons of the American one and then watching this, it was to me like there was a level of Easter eggs of, oh, I see where they're going with this, or they're going with this, but never to the point of, oh, well, I know how this one ends.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were a couple of times where it's like, I thought I might go this way. No, it goes this other way and stuff. And not in a, well, it's just a simple reversal or something like that. They did a really tight job on the writing.
I'd say for the majority of the reveals, they gave them at really good times.
Mm-hmm.
The last three episodes, maybe four episodes, they actually wound back more than they had been.
The overlap between episodes, because like when you were talking about it, the junkyard scene, that episode ended with kind of the two guys rushing towards each other.
Yeah.
And then the next episode rolls back just about a minute to reset the scene and then get back to there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, by these final episodes, they rewound and showed about 8 minutes of overlap.
Yeah.
Between the previous episode and the new one before it even got to new footage. And I can see where they kind of need to do that, particularly every other episode, because it's like, oh, well, that was last night. Where did we leave off? Oh, yeah. Okay, now I'm back in. Now let's get going.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pay enough attention to know if it was always being done on kind of those odd numbered episodes. And
yeah.
I think it was.
I wish I'd paid more attention. I wish I'd been more aware before we watched it. Hey, these aired two at a time.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't noticed that before.
Well, I think I'd noticed at one point and mentioned it, but not to the point where I was paying attention of, okay, now we flip to another night.
Yeah.
So, again, I don't know how common or uncommon that might be over there.
Yeah. This fascinated me in so many ways because it was excellent television, excellent programming. I normally don't watch TV. I have to read because for me, I get so caught up in the reading, I feel like I'm missing a lot of the action.
Well, it's funny because I watch a fair amount that's subtitled with the Super Sentai stuff, but the dialogue there, because it's aimed at kids and stuff like that, is simpler, it's shorter, and they conveniently color code the main characters.
Nice, yeah.
So it's a lot easier to keep track of than this.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they even color code the dialogue on the subtitles. Oh, that's the Red Ranger speaking. So here I found it a little harder to keep track, again, because there was more dialogue. It was coming faster.
Well, there's one episode where I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, you're going to have to rewind. You're going to have to pause on that one. I need to actually not just read this. I need to parse what they're saying.
That was the jury one again.
It was.
And we paused on that for a good few minutes. It's like, well, they're saying this. There's eight people in the jury. They've taken out one. They've got the two. I still think they're short one.
Yes, yes. It's kind of the math does not compute. We're accounting for seven people and how we feel about seven of the eight people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that was funny because, again, when the one juror gets kind of kicked out, it was essentially the Sophie equivalent doing the same sort of thing that Parker had actually done in that episode.
Doing a fraction.
A fraction of, yes.
Of what Parker had done. And then the Parker equivalent saying, if it had been me.
Yes, I'd have done this, that. And I think she lists everything Parker actually did.
Yes, yes.
Man, I would love to. I mean, again, I'm sure the writers had watched through everything. I've got to imagine the actors had gotten together and done that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I don't think they had bad production values at all in America. But this one felt almost a little more cinematic.
Well, there's an aspect of when you start with a novel and then say, okay, I'm going to make this into a movie. You've got so much material to work from. And I think that's where the decision to pull from all five seasons benefited them.
They weren't trying to just redo the first season of Leverage.
Yeah.
Or even redo the whole series of Leverage.
Yeah.
They were trying to do right by it and having that wealth of material to where they could, again, just pick and choose bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the one conversation that Roy had with the Parker equivalent, where he's like, hey, we've got your back on this, was almost verbatim of one of the things Hardison had said to Parker later in the series. But it's during the Iceman episode, she's worried about him, so he's not there to give the thing, so it made sense to have Roy do it. But it's like, I can see where when they were breaking down the story, it's like, okay, we need to have something here. Oh, well, they did this one scene here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at one point, and it was, I think we decided, like, around episode 11, the team kind of splits up.
Mm-hmm.
Taijun goes back to the insurance company, and when he wants everyone to come back together, he discreetly, like, sends flowers to the Sophie equivalent and that kind of stuff to get messages to them. And the message is a meeting time, a meeting place, and an kind of an, oh, by the way, here's a news article, look into this person or thing. Now, what I loved was they met up at a spin class, and the Sophie equivalent is leading the spin class, and oh my god, were they enthusiastic for the guy following Taijun.
Yes.
They were all in. What I would have loved, 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 would be, because he was looking through a glass door to see them all doing it, would have been if Yu Sing had basically recorded and then projected onto the door for the rest of the time they were in there.
And that's funny because that would have been a good callback to the Big Bird job.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I kept thinking, if the guy comes back and looks through the door again, you've turned off the colorful lights, you've turned off the music.
There was a couple of times I think this team would have been taken back by somebody. Oh, and another thing, coming back and seeing, oh, they've broken character.
Yes, yes. If Columbo had been in the show, they'd have been in trouble.
Yes, they'd have convinced him, he'd have walked off, and then a minute later when he comes back, ah, the jig's up.
Yeah.
That one, though, was funny because when they do the breakup of the team, as they'd done at the end of a couple of seasons, I was really wanting that overhead shot of the team scattering.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we got one or two overhead shots, like of the van and one or two other places.
Mm-hmm.
But not in one that I felt was almost an iconic shot for the American show.
Yeah.
The soundtrack here was not the same as the American one. Different style, but there were points where it was reminiscent of. They've got their equivalent of the Leverage music as the team's doing their thing.
Mm-hmm. I loved the music when Sophie was playing a mark and going melodramatic, because it went with that over-the-top melodramatic music. And you're like, oh, wow, we just switched to a soap opera.
Yes.
It was hilarious. And it gave that comedic tension break.
Mm-hmm.
Without her having to do it, she could still allegedly be serious and in character and in role, even as she was over the top at times with the giggles.
She did a really good job doing that, again, that actress acting.
Yeah.
Which, if you think about it, how hard would that be? Well, it's very hard because you're supposed to be an actress acting about not acting, and now you've got to seem natural, and then to play the con artist without overplaying it. And a couple of times you need to overplay it, you know. The balance on all of that was really well done.
I think the absolute best scene for her in terms of comedic value and really just nailing the "you want me to what?" was in the jury episode, where it's, we need you to stall the trial for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bringing the jury back in.
Yeah.
And she's pretending to be pregnant 8 months along, and she convincingly gets the judge to halt the trial until she can come back. The judge thinks she needs to go to the infirmary because she's screaming out in pain. And then at the end, she's like, thank you for promising to wait for me, but no need infirmary. Need bathroom.
What I was really wanting from that episode, and I'm not sure how they could have played it and made it work, but a callback to the finale or episode right before it of fourth season with Nate's father at the patent office.
Yeah.
And specifically the fake belly that Sophie used.
Yes, yes, the mechanical one.
The mechanical one that does the kick and the heartbeat and all of that.
Yeah.
And it could have just been as simple as you'd be amazed what you could find on the internet.
Yeah.
So they... they had some, it was one that, again, going into it, I was really curious how it was going to work, because, again, some of these actors look just like children comparatively, because they're very youthful. But, man, they did a great job. I think they were well cast. I think the story was so much more sophisticated and dense than, you know, an equivalent season of the American show.
Mm-hmm.
The fact they decided to start a little earlier before Nate's son died, I felt was a really smart move because it gave the rest of the team a little bit of ownership of all of that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and when they came back to the son's death, it wasn't just Nate being haunted by it. It was, wait, the drug that we stole trying to save his life originally killed another kid because it has side effects, and it turns out that the trials are being done illegally.
Yeah.
And it was just haunting not just him, but really the hospital his kid was in and society.
Well, if you think about it, if that had been just a case that had come to this sort of a team without the personal connection, well, how do you know the drug really was what caused it? He was sick. You know, there was that seed of doubt. Here, there was none of that.
Yeah.
And there were a number of times where I felt because there were those personal connections, or they knew what was at stake, it gave it a little more weight.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just, oh, there's some old people at a home. It was somebody that one of them knew.
Yeah.
So, also with the old folk home, that was one of the few times we really got to see that Roy is a cook and some of that, again, hallmarks of Elliot.
Yes, yes. Is there anything he's not good at?
Yeah. Man, I wish they had done this in a way that it almost could have played off that this was that Leverage International that Hardison had teased at the end of the American series.
Me too. It feels like it is. And the fact that they managed to give it that feel while still pulling so much from the U.S. Leverage is impressive.
Yeah. At the very least, I'd like to see some reference, like I said, to this in the American one. I think they deserve that. Again, they did a great job with this. I was, like I said, unsure, was this going to work? Was it going to be fun? I was expecting something more episodic, a little more action and comedic, but again, what we got, very satisfying.
Incredibly. Yeah, I highly recommend it, whether or not you've watched the U.S. one.
Yeah. Again, it's totally accessible. There are Easter eggs you get if you've watched it. If not, it is completely understandable and enjoyable in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one that at some point I think is worth rewatching, just to get some of those callbacks a little better, or to get that layer. How does this Latimer equivalent really look at the beginning now that we know who he is?
Yeah.
So again, ton of fun. Glad we did it, and glad they made it. Man, if they do a second season, I'm all in for that.
Me too. Yeah.
Because it looked like it would be a little bit more international. It'd be dealing with the Black Book. It'd be kind of like they're under somebody else's thumb. Again, like the whole bit with the Italian in that season of the American one. But they've done such a good job of making stuff their own that I've got to imagine they've already got a game plan if they get that next season. Yeah. I just don't even know how to find out if they do.
No, I can't even tell from looking at the Korean network, TV Chosen, where it broadcast in Korea. All I can see is up through the final episode that aired, but I don't see, I was hoping for an announcement. Hey, did you know?
Well, and that probably is delayed because of COVID and all of that. I was thinking the Wikipedia page for the show might be another place to go keep an eye on.
Yeah, I had already checked there. And the final episode aired in Korea December 8th. And when you think about the state of the world.
Of 2019.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, they wouldn't have had time to start filming another season. So even if they had gotten a green light, it would be, yeah, with the pandemic and stuff, all bets are off as to when they might be able to kind of start back up.
Yeah, because by January, Asia was already starting to realize, you know, things may not be normal for a little while.
Well, and I'm not sure where they're at now with the COVID stuff and whether their production stuff's starting to spin back up or not. So.
Now, it does say for production that the first script reading was held August 2019. That's an interesting note in Wikipedia. That's, they filmed and 2 months later had it on the air.
Wow.
But when you think about the fact that they weren't crashing cars and doing a lot of the effects,
they had a number of locations, they had a ton of extras. That seems like a really tight production schedule, or a very efficient production schedule. And I did not feel like it, there was nothing that made me feel like it was rushed or anything.
I guess my point is, a lot of U.S. shows now are, well, prior to the pandemic, were filming on about an 8-day schedule. And that was if they needed special effects. When I was working a show that didn't really, no special effects to speak of, and only rarely did we do an explosion or a crash, we were on a 6-day filming schedule. So if you're filming either Monday through Friday plus Monday, or I don't know the rules in Korea, maybe you can film Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but 6 weeks out back in the 90s for low budget.
Yeah. And with digital filming and editing and stuff like that, they've got a lot more flexibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you go in and you've got the sets built or scouted and stuff like that, I guess you could do it. But that just seems.
And there were a lot of places they seemed to come back to.
Yeah. the hospital a number of times, and certainly the Coffee Bay place and the headquarters. It still seems crazy efficient and tight and stuff. More power to them.
Yeah.
But that also goes towards one overarching arc where it's like, here's the bad guy's lair. We can go back to that a couple of times and stuff like that. Not being able to read the credits, it was hard to know how many directors did they have and all of that. And the IMDb page is fairly thin for the series.
Sadly, yes. And I couldn't figure out if there was a Korean IMDb. I tried.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somewhere we could find more information on it. But yeah. Again, ton of fun. Had picked it up when I had, one, found out about it, and two, found I could get it on eBay for the DVDs. So money well spent, very enjoyable watch.
Yeah, I highly recommend this one. It was amazing.
Yeah. And again, it's a leverage Korean version. I had just done a search for it on eBay.
Yeah, on IMDb, it's listed as leverage 2019. Seems to just separate it from the U.S. leverage.
2019, I've also seen it as leverage parenthesis KR.
Yeah.
You know, parenthesis for that. But yeah, I think it's worth checking out if you can find it and are willing to read the subtitles.
Yes.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.